Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 10th chapter, verses 1 to 30. Maitreya Vacha Prajapate Duhitaram Shishu Marasya Vajra Upaye Me Pamim Nama Tatsutau Kapavatsara. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Maitreya said, "My dear Vidura, thereafter Dhruva Maharaj married the daughter of Prajapati Shishumara, whose name was Prami, and two sons named Kalpa and Vatsara were born of her." So King Uttanapad has installed Dhruva Maharaj on the throne as emperor of this planet. Seeing his maturity, having the consent of his ministers, and with the blessings of the citizens, Srila Prabhupada says that he must have done many other wonderful things since he came back from the forest. Of course, it was the prediction of the Supreme Lord also that he would rule the kingdom. So now the auspicious time has arrived, and the earth is greatly fortunate to have such a Vaishnava king. So here now Dhruva has gotten married, has two sons, Kalpa and Vatsara. What's the significance of these names, Kalpa and Vatsara? What means Adi? Time, yes. Kalpa is a day of Brahma and Vatsara is a year. A year, Vatsara. Kalpa and Vatsara. So Prabhupada explains, why didn't Uttanapad get his son married before he left home? Because usually it's the duty of the king to get the children married and then they retire. But he didn't do that. Yes, Sankirtan. Yeah, he couldn't wait. He couldn't wait to leave the palace. He was so eager for self-realization. And he realized the importance of preparing himself for death, going back to Godhead. Quite unlike today's modern politicians, who will not leave office unless they're forced to do so. So verse 2. The greatly powerful Dhruva Maharaj had another wife named Ila, who was the daughter of the demigod Vayu. By her he begot a son named Utkala and a very beautiful daughter. 3. Dhruva Maharaj's younger brother Uttama, who was still unmarried. I think maybe you should check the generator or put it on. Something's wrong. Dhruva Maharaj's younger brother Uttama, who was still unmarried, once went on a hunting excursion and was killed by a powerful yaksha in the Himalaya mountains. Along with him, his mother Suruchi also followed the path of her son. She died. So Dhruva Maharaj finally got his revenge, even though he didn't want it at this point, he got it. Verse 4. When Dhruva Maharaj heard of the killing of his brother Uttama by the yakshas in the Himalaya mountains, being overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, he got on his chariot and went out for victory over the city of the yakshas, Alakapuri. So the Sanskrit, I'll read the Sanskrit because it's interesting. Yuvapati vadham shutva kopa marsha shucharpita jaitram syandanamastaya gata punya janalayam. So the words kopa marsha shucharpita. Kopa means anger. Amarsha means vengeance. Shucha, lamentation. So these were the emotions that Dhruva Maharaj, a pure devotee of the Lord, was feeling. Anger, vengeance, lamentation. So not that a devotee doesn't have any emotions. He has emotions. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains this. Dhruva Maharaja's becoming angry, overwhelmed with grief, and envious of the enemies was not incompatible with his position as a great devotee. It is a misunderstanding that a devotee should not be angry, envious, or overwhelmed by lamentation. Dhruva Maharaj was the king, and when his brother was unceremoniously killed, it was his duty to take revenge against the yakshas from the Himalayas. So I already spoke to you about this one example of Srila Prabhupada, but I'll repeat it again. And here I actually have the lecture in front of me. It's Mauritius 75, Srimad Bhagavatam 126. Prabhupada is giving a lecture, and an Indian man, after in the question-answer period, he says that, "I don't understand this Arjuna when he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and when his son died, then he was full of lamentation. He got so affected. How could he be a pure devotee? How could he be a man who has heard Bhagavad Gita from the Supreme Lord? So that was his question. So Prabhupada said, actually, this is natural. This is normal to feel these emotions because we're human beings after all. But he did not stop his service to Krishna. So that was the test. That just because his son died didn't mean he left the battlefield. So again, there's another relevant reference from Srila Prabhupada that Brajbihari Prabhu read in a previous class. And some of you weren't here, so I don't know if you all heard. I won't read the whole thing, but I'll just pick up some parts. This was a letter to Atreya Rishi in 1972, 4th February 1972. And Atreya Rishi was thinking, he wrote to Srila Prabhupada that he saw some problems with his godbrothers and godsisters or some faults. So he said, is this due to impersonalism? And Srila Prabhupada replied, no. It's the opposite. It's because they're persons. And that's why we have problems and emotions. And he said, it is not because there may be some faults in our godbrothers and godsisters or because there may be some mismanagement or lack of cooperation. This is due to being impersonalist. No, it is the nature of a living condition to always have some fault. And then Prabhupada gives all the examples of the spiritual world, how the gopis are envious and different problems. And then he said that ISKCON, we should not expect ISKCON to be utopia. He says, it will never be utopia. Because devotees are persons, therefore there will always be some lacking. So I remember when I first joined, when I was a new devotee, I was living with the devotees and I was thinking, oh, these must be all really great yogis. Because I was interested in mystic powers. So I thought, these devotees, they must be able to have all these powers. So we have our different, but then when you see they don't, then you get disillusioned sometimes. Yeah.
What was he
thinking? Atreya Rishi was thinking, because he saw problems and faults, that this was due to impersonalism. Well, if someone's impersonal to you, or it's like that. Yeah, improper dealings. But Prabhupada said, no, it's because we're persons. We're persons, and that's why we have these lackings. Lackings.
I mean, there's impersonalism and then there's personalism.
Yes.
Could there be too much personalism?
Too much personalism. Yes. Well, in the sense, I would say that sometimes I think that problem is too much personalism in the sense that we're so individual. And so then, therefore, the differences are emphasized. So in that sense, there may be too much personalism. Because we're one and we're different. So as persons, we're quite different. We're quite individual. So sometimes, because of that difference, then there's difficulty to get along or to become unified. Yeah. Where is the false ego coming in? Yes. But Prabhupada, I'll just read you his conclusion and there maybe you can understand it better. If there is sometimes slight disagreements between devotees, it is not due to impersonalism, but it is because they are persons and such disagreements should not be taken very seriously. He says the devotee is always pessimistic about the material world, but he's very optimistic about spiritual life. So in this way, you should consider anyone engaged in Krishna's service is always the best person. So there's comparison there between materialists and the devotee. He says they're better than kings, somewhere here. Better than kings. And then at the end he says, by your quiet and humble attitude, you should set the example of Vaishnava, so all may learn from you, and very soon their puffed up attitude will disappear and they will come to you and seek your advice in matters. So there at the end he kind of said, well, this is how you should behave. You be humble. You know, they may be puffed up, but you can be humble. Prabhupada was very expert.
Yeah.
in dealing with devotees. So emotion is not a fault, but it's a characteristic of personality. And here Dhruva Maharaj was exhibiting some emotions, especially in India. They think someone who's a spiritualist, he should never get angry. But Prabhupada often got angry. So they didn't appreciate that so much because they thought it's supposed to be shanti, shanti. That's spiritual life. It's all shanti. No, it's not. Of course, if you want to merge in the Brahman, then you might get temporary shanti. But not if you want to be a devotee of Krishna. You have to fight like Arjuna. It's verse 5. Dhruva Maharaj went to the northern direction of the Himalayan range. In a valley, he saw a city full of ghostly persons who were followers of Lord Shiva. Interesting. Anybody ever see these ghostly persons? Ever go to Tibet and see these Tibetans? Prabhupada says these are the Tibetans, yakshas, Himalayan tribes like Tibetans. So Burijan makes a comment that people nowadays think these Tibetan is very special, it's very mystical. People are curious about Tibetan yoga, Tibetan this and that. He says, so, but actually Burijan Prabhu says that this religion comes from Bengal, very tamasic. They worship forest spirits, all these things. So it's quite interesting. But actually they are called pious. Here, I think in the Sanskrit, yes, verse 4, punya janalayam, punya, they're pious. Because they're worshipping Kuvera. So they have a relationship with a devotee in some sense. Kuvera is a devotee. So now we'll read on, verse 6. Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, as soon as Dhruva Maharaj reached Alakapuri, he immediately blew his conch shell, and the sound reverberated throughout the entire sky and in every direction. The wives of the yakshas became very much frightened. From their eyes, it was apparent that they were full of anxiety. O hero Vidura, the greatly powerful heroes of the yakshas, unable to tolerate the resounding vibration of the conch shell of Dhruva Maharaj, came forth from their city with weapons and attacked Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj, who was a great charioteer and certainly a great bowman also, immediately began to kill them by simultaneously discharging arrows, three at a time. When the heroes of the yakshas saw that all their heads were being thus threatened by Dhruva Maharaj, they could very easily understand their awkward position, and they concluded that they would certainly be defeated. But as heroes, they lauded the action of Dhruva. So this is the Kshatriya spirit, Prabhupada explains in the purport. This spirit of fighting in a sporting attitude is very significant in this verse. The yakshas were severely attacked. Dhruva Maharaj was their enemy. But still, upon witnessing the wonderful, heroic acts of Maharaj Dhruva, they were very pleased with him. This straightforward appreciation of an enemy's prowess is a characteristic of real Kshatriya spirit. So the Kshatriyas, they would fight in the day and they'd be friends at night. Sometimes they would go and visit each other's camps and eat together and drink together. What are some examples of this happening? Yes, Vanamali. Mahabharata. Yes, Duryodhana received Arjuna. Five arrows. Yes. Yes, Duryodhana was keeping five special arrows to kill the five Pandavas for Bhishma. Bhishma Dev said, I have these special five arrows. So Duryodhana said, let me keep them. I'll keep them safely. Because he was afraid something might happen. And something did happen. Krishna sent Arjuna to go take those arrows because previously Duryodhana had promised Arjuna, I will give you a boon. But Arjuna said, okay, I'll take it later. So now Arjuna came for his boon and he got those five arrows from Duryodhana. Yes? When do the Kshatriyas rest? After they eat and drink and be merry and then they First they celebrate, you know, it's sunset, they have fun, and then they rest. But one night they didn't rest. Only one night they fought the whole night, 14th day. That was because they were really upset with Arjuna. Krishna cheated them. He killed Jayadratha by cheating. And then they fought. And then at that time, the Rakshasas, I mean, the Ghatotkacha was very powerful on the Pandava side. So he was fighting by night because Rakshasas become powerful at night. And so he was killed in that battle. But otherwise, they would stop at night, at sunset. Okay, so let's go on. Verse 10. Just like serpents who cannot tolerate being trampled upon by anyone's feet, the yakshas, being intolerant of the wonderful prowess of Dhruva Maharaj, threw twice as many arrows, six from each of their soldiers, and thus they very valiantly exhibited their prowess. The Yaksha soldiers were 130,000 strong, all greatly angry and all desiring to defeat the wonderful activities of Dhruva Maharaj. With full strength, they showered upon Maharaj Dhruva, along with his chariot and charioteer, various types of feathered arrows, parikas, iron bludgeons, nishtringshas, swords, prashashulas, tridents, parashvatas, lances, shaktis, pikes, rishtis, spears, and bhushundi, weapons. So here's an inventory of the different weapons that a kshatriya, or at least the yakshas, were using at that time. Dhruva Maharaj was completely covered by an incessant shower of weapons, just as a mountain is covered by incessant rainfall. So this is one of my favorite purports in Srimad Bhagavatam, because it explains Anartanavritti, the process of Anartanavritti. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out in this connection that although Dhruva Maharaj was covered by the incessant arrows of the enemy, this does not mean that he succumbed in the battle. The example of a mountain peaks being covered by incessant rain is just suitable. For when a mountain is covered by incessant rain, all dirty things are washed from the body of the mountain. Similarly, the incessant shower of arrows from the enemy gave Dhruva Maharaj new vigor to defeat them. In other words, whatever incompetency he might have had was washed away. So it appears that he was losing the battle because there was a shower and he was covered. But actually, it wasn't like that. By the shower of arrows, all the dirty things, all his incompetencies were being washed away. So there's a verse in 10th canto, 10, 20, 15. I'll just sing it for you. Girayo varshadhara virhanyamana navipitu abhipuyamana vyasana yatod yatadhok sachachetasa. Just as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy season were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds. So this is the analogy. Now when you see the rain attacking the mountain is not disturbed, it just becomes clean. So when you see all dangers coming to a devotee, he's peaceful. And all of his incompetencies are washed away, all the anartas. So Lord Brahma, if you remember in third canto, there's a very nice purport to one verse, 3, 13, 17, that Lord Brahma, he was perplexed when he saw that the earth had fallen into the ocean. So then he said, well, what can we do about this? It's best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. So in that purport, Srila Prabhupada says, devotees of the Lord, who are all confidential servitors, are sometimes perplexed in the discharge of their respective duties, but they are never discouraged. So sometimes we get perplexed, but not discouraged. Are there any other verses which support this point? That so many things may happen to the devotee, but it makes him actually stronger to fight. He's not perplexed. These are some of the verses I found. I guess it's not easy. There's another purport, or end verse, 6:4. You got one, or no? Yes. That's, yeah, okay. So one is the Samadhi verse, the first thing you said. Navichayate Guru, even in the greatest danger, he's not disturbed, one who is in Samadhi. That's Bhagavad Gita 6:20 to 23, somewhere around there. And the other one, it was Puryamanam Ashalam Pravishtam. That although so many rivers are entering into the ocean, and the ocean is being filled, but it's not disturbed. So the devotee is like that with material desires. Yes. Okay. So 2:56, Dukeshvanu Vignamana, Sukeshu Vigatasbiha. That he's not disturbed by distress or elated in happiness, free from attachment, fear, and anger. He's a sage of steady mind, Sittadhir Muni. Yes. Bhima was perplexed. What are you saying? Yudhisthira. Yeah, Yudhisthira was perplexed, right.
Yes, especially
Yudhisthira was perplexed.
No, at that point was they went to see Bhishma.
Bhishma, uh-huh.
Who was also said that, and it's inconceivable.
Yes, this did I? Well, I don't see. I don't understand the plan of the Lord.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
But he was not discouraged.
Right. So another nice verse, you can look it up. I won't read the whole verse. 6:4, 27 to 28. I'll just pick up one sentence from the purport. The Prabhupada says that all the material impediments are different energies of the Lord. So when a devotee is eager to see the Lord, he says, "Ai nandatunu jakikaram patiramam vishame bhavambhuta. I have fallen into this ocean of material nations. Please pick me up." So this is the mood that we need to overcome impediments. And Prabhupada says, oh, here's the sentence. Being pleased with the devotee, the Lord turns all his material impediments into spiritual service. So we may see so many impediments coming to us, but if we have the right mood of acceptance, then Krishna turns everything into service. All the impediments become service to his lowest feet. Has anybody ever experienced that? Where all the impediments become service. We're waiting for that day, yes. When all the impediments will become service, nice service. So, Prabhupada said in one letter, here's a purport, 5:1:15. How all impediments will be cut to pieces by chanting the holy name of the Lord. And these are different examples. I have a very nice realization here from one Back to Godhead. This is January, February 2004. We're on verse 13 of the 10th chapter. 10:13. And we're discussing how impediments or seemingly dangerous things can turn into service to the Lord or blessings, even blessings. I didn't do that. Here this lady who wrote this article for BTG, she has since left her body. So she was diagnosed with cancer. She's a pious Indian lady and mother of two devotees in Pune. And I'll just read a little bit about her realization and the title of her article, How My Cancer Became a Blessing. So how cancer can become a blessing, or how we're discussing how impediments can turn into service, or dangerous situations can turn into service of the Lord. So these are her realizations. I'm just going to read one paragraph. She says, "When I look back at my life and the great spiritual transformation that has taken place over the last few months, I feel strongly that cancer has proved to be a blessing for me. Had it not been for this deadly disease, I would never have risen from ritualistic piety to heartfelt devotion." So most of the Indians have this ritualistic piety. Now they just go on, they go to the temple, they give some donation, and that's it. And that's their religion. She said, if I hadn't got cancer, I would not have risen from ritualistic piety to heartfelt devotion. I would simply have grown old, got disease, died, and continued on aimlessly in the cycle of birth and death. I would never have gotten the great fortune of living in the Lord's temple, and I would probably never have sought or received initiation. And certainly I would never have experienced the sweetness of helpless remembrance of Lord Krishna. I feel, therefore, that the Lord has blessed me by giving me cancer and by simultaneously giving me shelter through his devotees and mission. So this is an example how some great impediment, we think, oh, I got cancer, that's it, I'm finished. But it became a service, became a source of inspiration. And this is a great impediment, no doubt. Everyone would think, if you get cancer, this is it. This is a big impediment for my service. But for her, it was the beginning of her spiritual life, actually. So we're on chapter 10, verse 14. And Dhruva was covered by arrows, just as a mountain is covered by rainfall. So the analogy was, who would like to explain the analogy to Braj Bihari Prabhu, which is what we've just been going through? Madhavindapuri. So that was what we've been discussing in the last few minutes. Very wonderful purport by Srila Prabhupada. Comments by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So we'll continue in the battle. All the siddhas from the higher planetary systems were observing the fight from the sky. And when they saw that Dhruva Maharaj had been covered by the incessant arrows of the enemy, they roared tumultuously. The grandson of Manu, Dhruva, is now lost. They cried that Dhruva Maharaj was just like the sun and that now he had set within the ocean of the Yakshas. So purport, paragraph 2. The denizens of the planet Sitaloka, where the residents can fly in the sky without airplanes, were anxious over Dhruva Maharaj's welfare in the battlefield. Sri Rupa Goswami says, therefore, that not only is a devotee well protected by the Supreme Lord, but all the demigods and even ordinary men are anxious for his security and safety. So that reminds me of a story. I won't go into the story, but Rasikananda Prabhu, one time, he was called by a Muslim king. And this Muslim king was very, very bad. He was killing people. Every day he would kill so many people, just if he didn't like them or if they were Hindus. So then he heard that this Rasikananda was very powerful. And so he wanted to also get him. So he called Rasikananda to come to see him. And on the way, there was this huge mad elephant coming in the path. But as soon as the king saw Rasikananda, just by his effulgence, by his beauty, then he felt his heart change. And he was even thinking in his heart, well, I hope the elephant doesn't... At first he was thinking, I hope the elephant kills him and he's finished and doesn't give me any more problem. Then as soon as he saw Rasikananda, then his heart changed and he felt, oh, I hope... It looks like he's actually representative of Narayan. I hope the elephant doesn't hurt him. His heart immediately changed. Yes, Madan Gopal Prabhu. Yeah, right. Yes. Isn't that interesting? Yes. Yes. And here the opposite. Yes, before Dhruva was criticizing the demigods, but here Prabhupada says, no, the demigods were anxious for his safety and security. So that is, even ordinary men are anxious. So Srila Prabhupada, when he would travel, then people would just naturally help him out. So here the comparison given that Dhruva Maharaj appeared to merge in the ocean of the Yakshas is also significant. When the sun sets on the horizon, it appears that the sun drowns in the ocean. But factually, the sun has no difficulty. Similarly, although Dhruva appeared to drown in the ocean of the Yakshas, he had no difficulty. As the sun rises again in due course at the end of night, so Dhruva Maharaj, although he might have been in difficulty, because after all it was a fight, and in any fighting activities there are reverses, that did not mean that he was defeated. Yeah, there's another purport, 1.19.19, where Prabhupada says that there's an invisible chain between the Lord, the demigods, and the devotees on earth. And there, Prabhupada says, a demigod takes pleasure seeing someone go back to Godhead. And he, so much so, by his adi-daivic powers, he helps the devotees in all respects. So this is happening. This is 1.19.19, Canto 1, 1919. And that's in reference to when Maharaj Parikshit was decided to sit on the bank of the Ganga to fast. The demigods started showering flowers out of pleasure. So this is happening. There's a nice verse also in 11th canto, 14.18. About not being defeated. That's here at the end of the purport. Prabhupada says he might have been in difficulty. That did not mean he was defeated. So there is a verse in the 11th canto, more in reference to us. If my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires. But because of his unflinching devotion for me, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. And sometimes we're harassed very much by material desires. But if we just completely devote ourselves to Krishna, try to take shelter of Krishna, we won't be defeated. So this is the message Prabhupada is giving us here about Juha. 15. The Yakshas, being temporarily victorious, exclaimed that they had conquered Juha Maharaj. But in the meantime, Juha Maharaj's chariot suddenly appeared, just as the sun suddenly appears from within foggy mist. So we are seeing a lot of nice examples here. And pictures are being painted by Maitreya Muni. First, the sun is setting. So Juha is like the sun, it's setting in the ocean. And the Yakshas are like the ocean, and he's setting in the ocean. So now in the next verse, there is a big fog. So the Yakshas are like the fog, and Juha is coming out of the fog, just as the sun burns its way through the fog. So two different verses and two different pictures or analogies, not analogies, but pictures are being painted here about the scene on the battlefield. So Juha is like the sun in both cases, drowning in the ocean, but then he comes out burning his way through the fog. So if you've ever been to the Himalayas, or even here, actually, in the wintertime, it's very foggy in the morning, up until 11, sometimes 12 or 1 o'clock, but eventually the sun burns its way out, usually, burns its way out of the fog. If we have a nice winter, if it's not such a good winter, then it may stay cloudy. But generally, especially in the Himalayas, it's so foggy, you can't see yourself, and then by 11, the fog clears, the sun burns its way out. So Juha was like this. Verse 16. Juha Maharaj's bow and arrows twanged and hissed, causing lamentation in the hearts of his enemies. He began to shoot incessant arrows, shattering all their different weapons, just as the blasting wind scatters the assembled clouds in the sky. Sharp arrows released from the bow of Juha Maharaj pierced the shields and bodies of the enemy, like the thunderbolts released by the King of Heaven, which dismantle the bodies of the mountains. The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, the heads of those who were cut to pieces by the arrows of Juha Maharaj were decorated very beautifully with earrings and turbans. The legs of their bodies were as beautiful as golden palm trees. Their arms were decorated with golden bracelets and armlets. And on their heads, there were very valuable helmets bedecked with gold. All these ornaments lying on the battlefield were very attractive and could bewilder the mind of a hero." So how would a hero get bewildered if he saw all the ornaments on the battlefield? What's the bewilderment? Yeah, Manavan Puri? He might think, oh, here's a good opportunity to get some wealth. Yeah, but what happens if he goes running after the wealth? Yes. So that if he gets bewildered like that, then he could lose his life. So you just have to let all the gold lay down there and don't touch it and keep on fighting. So it's bewildering. You see all these golden helmets, and that actually the victor would get the booty. They would take the booty of warfare. So, verse 20.
It's hard to imagine, like, others after a war, getting all the off their horse, you give off their turn.
Right, no.
Ornaments off the dead body.
Yeah, the Pandavas weren't into it. But some people might have been into it. Some people were. That was part of the prize of war. The gold from the teeth. Gold from the teeth. So it's still going on, even after 5,000 years. No, this is millions of years. This was millions of years ago. I don't remember how long, but a couple billion years ago this happened. Anyway, beginning of creation. 2 billion. 2 billion years ago. Just imagine. 2 billion years ago, this battle took place. And I know. Exactly. Yes, you were there, right? Oh. Okay. Juhu Maharaj, the best of human beings, observed that in that great battlefield, not one of the opposing soldiers was left standing with proper weapons. He then desired to see the city of Alakapuri, but he thought to himself, no one knows the plans of the mystic yakshas. So although his eyes told him nobody is left there, but his mind, his intelligence told him, no, they're up to some tricks now. I can't trust them. I may think they're dead, but actually they're not. There's still some left and they're going to do something. In the meantime, and he's right, while Juva Maharaj, doubtful of his mystic enemies, was talking with his charioteer, they heard a tremendous sound, as if the whole ocean were there, and they found that from the sky a great dust storm was coming over them from all directions. Within a moment, the whole sky was overcast with dense clouds, and severe thundering was heard. There was glittering electric lightning and severe rainfall. My dear faultless Vidura, in that rainfall there is blood, mucus, pus, stool, urine, and marrow falling heavily before Juva Maharaj, and there were trunks of bodies falling from the sky. This reminds me of one Maharaj when he was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and he said to Srila Prabhupada, even if it will rain blood from the sky, I won't leave Vrindavan. He was one of our temple presidents. One of the first temple presidents. And Prabhupada said to him, you are expecting? Anyway, reminded me of this. Blood, pus, mucus, stool, urine, and marrow. Next, a great mountain was visible in the sky.
Is he slumming
up? I don't think so. But it could be. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't really know. He left ISKCON after Prabhupada left. And he joined another group, so I don't know. Next, a great mountain was visible in the sky, and from all directions hailstones fell, along with lances, clubs, swords, iron bludgeons, and great pieces of stone. So what kind of rain is coming? Different kinds of rain from the sky. Just imagine. You can't imagine. Juva Maharaj also saw many big serpents with angry eyes vomiting forth fire and coming to devour him, along with groups of mad elephants, lions, and tigers. Then, as if it were the time of dissolution of the whole world, the fierce sea with foaming waves and great roaring sounds came forward before him. The demon yakshas are by nature very heinous, and by their demoniac power of illusion, they can create many strange phenomena to frighten one who is less intelligent. When the great sages heard that Juva Maharaj was overpowered by the illusory mystic tricks of the demons, they immediately assembled to offer him auspicious encouragement. So this is what the sages said. Atanapada Bhagavanstavashan Katanva Devakshinata Banataki Harovipakshan Yannamateyamapitaya Nisham Yachadha Lokanjasatarati Dustanamangamityam. All the sages said, dear Juva, O son of King Uttanapad, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Sharangatanva, who relieves the distresses of his devotees, Kill all your threatening enemies. The holy name of the Lord is as powerful as the Lord himself. Therefore, simply by chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus, a devotee is saved. So in purport, Prabhupada says, the great Rishis approached Dhruva Maharaj at a time when his mind was very perplexed due to the magical feats exhibited by the Yakshas. A devotee is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his inspiration only, Visayas came to encourage Dhruva Maharaj and assure him that there was no danger because he was a soul fully surrendered to the Supreme Lord. By the grace of the Lord, if a devotee at the time of death can simply chant his holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Simply by chanting this Maha Mantra, he immediately surpasses the great ocean of the material sky and enters the spiritual sky. He never has to come back for repetition of birth and death. The Yakshas, huh? Yakshas didn't appreciate that. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can surpass the ocean of death. So Dhruva Maharaj was certainly able to surpass the illusory magical feats of the Yakshas, which for the time being disturbed his mind. So what references do we have about the holy name which can deliver us from death? Only Adi Purusha, not you. Oh, is that what the... Yeah, I heard a little bit of it. So how did the holy name... Etavan Yogisankhapyam. Very relevant. Etavan Yogisankhapyam Sadharma Parinishtaya. Janmalabha Parapunsam Ante Narayana Smriti. So the class is very relevant for this class. Ante Narayana Smriti. So it doesn't matter what position you're in. If you can remember Krishna at the time of death, then you're successful. Then you're perfect. Then everything you've done in your life has got some meaning. There's a nice verse from 6th Canto, 6.8, 27 to 29, which also describes the power of the holy name. Yannobayam grahe puya bhut ketubhya nipya vacha sari sikpebhya damstribhya bhuttebhya vya pya vacha savanyatani bhagavan namarupana kirtana payantusan shansaryo yena shaya pratipaka. May the glorification of the transcendental name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead protect us from the influence of bad planets. So if you have a, if your astrology is, if you're in a bad place right now, you have to just chant the holy name. If you're in Rahu, meteors. Remember when they were afraid of one meteor was supposed to come, or comet was supposed to come close. Envious human beings. Serpents, scorpions, and animals like tigers and wolves. And monkeys maybe too, although it's not in the verse. We should try it for monkeys. May it protect us from ghosts and the material elements like earth, water, fire, and air. And may it also protect us from lightning and our past sins. We are... Yeah, animals, right. They're animals. Right. We are always afraid of these hindrances to our auspicious life. Therefore, may they all be completely destroyed by chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Any other verses about the holy name which say that they destroy all fear of death? And what's that? Etan Nivrityamananam? Acha. The root. I don't know. Upanishad? Okay. Maringopal. Appana Sangsitingvara Yanama Virshogranan. Tato Sadhya Vimucheta Vyabhibeti Sayamaya. 1.1.14. Yes. Even unconsciously, if you chant, you get protected from fear personified. And the benefits, here also liberation, Krishna mantra hoite habe sansara mochan Krishna hoite pabe Krishna charan CC Adi Lila 773. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, you can obtain freedom from material existence. Indeed, simply by chanting Hare Krishna, you will be able to see the lotus feet of the Lord. That's Adi 773. So these are some very Adi 773. Kali Santara Upanishad, the famous verse, Kali Santara Upanishad. So this verse 30 is very relevant for myself also, because when I was studying this verse, then I had this kind of very similar experience to Dhruv Maharaj. I told a few devotees about it, that I was in Bombay, and I was in there for a routine something or other. I can't remember. Anyway, checkup, some kind of checkup. So they gave me anesthetic, but I wasn't responding to the anesthetic. I wasn't becoming unconscious. So they gave me again more, and I still wasn't. So they gave me a third dose, overdose of anesthetic. So then I was leaving my body, and of course I was conscious through the whole thing. And I went to this place, it was complete darkness, complete black, but I was conscious, and no false ego, no mind, no intelligence, just the black and me seeing the black, me in the black. So then in that place I couldn't remember Krishna, and so then what happened was the holy name itself appeared before me in color, in beautiful colors, and like Virajan Prabhu said, like a screensaver. It was moving like a screensaver, and it was saving me too. Like in beautiful colors, all the colors of the rainbow, one after the other, in each letter. That's all I can say. And then it was moving also, and so I was attracted. What is this? And I didn't know what it was, of course. But then by habit, because I've been chanting my whole life, so then I started chanting, even though I didn't know what it was. And then as soon as I start chanting, then my remembrance came. Oh, I'm a devotee, and how come I'm stuck in the void? How come I'm in this terrible place, and how come I'm not back to Godhead? And where's Krishna, and where's all the devotees, and where's Prabhupada, and how come I'm here? And those were I was very frustrated, extremely frustrated for being in the black. But it was interesting, because I was seeing the holy name, but I was thinking, where's Krishna? Like for me, I didn't understand, this is Krishna. I said, where is Krishna? Where's Goloka? Where's all these things? And so then, so many realizations I got. And one was that even though if at the time of death, if you don't remember Krishna, Krishna remembers you. Because we chant our whole life. And so by that chanting, then the holy name comes. Even if you don't chant, the holy name itself comes. And then you can, and he helps you at that. So when you, like for me, that was like an experience, a death-like experience of what it may be like, a death. And for me, at that time, I was, after I came back to this body, it was like having another birth again, learning to walk, 2 days to walk, 2 days to eat, and about 2 months to accept my identity again, because I had been out of my identity, separated from my false ego. But now I'm back in it again. So back to the old feelings of, but still you don't forget. And it's like tests like this also that give you so much faith. At that time, I got, instead of faith, I lost my faith, because I was thinking, oh my God. And when I was up there in the void, I was thinking, I was remembering, oh, I did all this service for Krishna and I'm stuck in the void. How come? How come I'm in the void? And so anyway, I had some realizations about that too. But and also Bharijan also concurred that previous samskaras of jnana too very heavy in me. So then perhaps in the past I had been in that void-like state and had liked it before. But now because of being a devotee, it's frustrating for me to be in that state. And I don't like it, but still it comes back. But anyway, the point is that to remember Krishna at the time of death. And my experience is that even if you don't remember Krishna, if you practice in this life, Krishna will remember you. So that's very, it gives you so much faith when these things happen to you, that So, and the whole time, as soon as I became conscious, I was thinking, oh, what am I studying in Bhagavatam? I know whatever I study, I go through. What is it this time? And so then, and I couldn't figure it out, actually. I knew it was Dhruva fighting with the Yakshas, and I thought it was the other part where he comes out of the fog. But then when I actually went back to my study, I saw, no, it's the holy name. So the power of the holy name. And another realization I got was that even in the void, the holy name is there. And just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there's nothing to be had in all the 14 worlds but the holy name. And it's a fact that I've seen. That's all there is. And even there is no void, actually, in Krishna's creation. Krishna is everywhere. He has his holy name. So we're very fortunate to have been given the holy name by Srila Prabhupada, by our spiritual masters, so that no matter what condition we're in, we can remember Krishna. But we have to practice in this life to become attached to the holy name. So then we have it. We have it at the time of death. So any questions, comments? Want to go, Pak? In a what way? Mechanistic way. What's the difference? The question is, what's the difference between chanting the holy name in a, yeah, you can, in a mechanical way or by chanting it with feeling? How to get from one to the other? That's a very nice question, isn't it? That because we all have that experience of chanting both sides. Sometimes we chant mechanically, and sometimes we do chant. We remember Krishna and we're begging Krishna, please pick me up. So how to get from one to the other? It's a very good question. So what's the answer? Yes? Personal experience.
If you're in a difficult situation or in some kind of distress,
yeah,
it's easier to call to Krishna.
Okay, so if you're in a difficult situation or some kind of distress, it's easier to have that feeling, definitely. One time my son was in the airplane when he was small. He must have been maybe 10 or 11. Then he started getting really sick. And he started chanting the holy name. So when you're, it does help if you're put in these positions. Yes, Braj Bihari.
Practice. Prabhupada said that it took him 30 years to chant the way he chanted.
Srila Prabhupada said it took him 30 years to chant the way he's chanting now. Yeah, I know. Another thing happened to me when I was in Bombay. As soon as I arrived in Bombay, I got stuck in an elevator for 1 hour. So that was also another occasion to chant the holy name. I was stuck in a lift between two floors. And then you see, and then we had a phone. There was four of us. We had a phone in there, and we were phoning the chowkidar. And this was in the Bombay hospital because they hadn't used the lift in a long time. The hospital was closed. So then phoning the chowkidar, phoning. And so they're calling the guy, and the guy is somewhere out in Delhi, the one who can fix it. Somewhere out, way out in Bombay. The guy had to come. And then we could open the door, and we could see, you know, one floor here and one floor there, and people looking at us like we're specimens. And no, it was just a lift. Now they fixed it, you know. But they haven't used it in a long time. Used to happen in Juhu all the time. The crank. Yeah. Yeah, they couldn't do that. They wouldn't let us go out of the lift. At one point, they got it up so that we could actually get out, but they wouldn't allow us to get out until it was exact, because they were afraid it might just fall or something, and that was like a bit tense. And so these situations help you to remember the holy name. Yes. Yes. So this is answering the question how to make it with feeling.
And second,
conscious, deliberate effort.
Associating with persons, chanting with somebody who chants.
You chant with somebody who chants like that.
That
it wears off on you. Yes.
Once I had an experience in Nishinga
Maharaj. Nishinga Maharaj.
Next to him.
You chant next to Nishinga Maharaj.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't realize that.
When we chant with someone who actually is into it, but then we realize where we're at.
That's a big difference.
It takes time. Yeah, it takes time, and it It takes the mercy of Krishna. When he sees that you're really, really, that's what you want, and you're ready to give up all your ego and all the other things, then he'll give it to you, Parvati.
It also helps to give up Vaishnava.
Helps to give up Vaishnava Parat, yes. It does help. And Vaishnava, and also the critical mentality, which goes along with it. Not to be the editor of all the devotees' lives. If you have the editing mentality, yes. Oh yes, sometimes you just have to take care of your health. A lot of devotees who have sacrificed their health for 30 years, they find their health is gone after they become 50 or 40 or whatever. And then you have to take care of it. Yeah.
Setting aside the best time of the day.
Okay, set aside the best time of the day, no distraction, where you can actually chant, not just whole day long, oh, I forgot, I didn't finish my rounds, mentality, which is very difficult, yes. Dashamula Tattva, yes. Number nine. Two types of chanting within Navabhas.
Chayanamabhas,
which is shadow
resemblance.
And Pratibimba Namabhas.
Reflection of the resemblance
of chanting.
When the chanting of the holy name is without offenses, but also without the knowledge of one's original spirit.
Okay, so you can look this up somewhere. It sounds like Harinam Chitamani. Yeah, it sounds like Harinam Chitamani. You can look that up.
And then there's a whole paragraph.
Yeah.
Two
different types of Namabhas. So those who want to learn more about it, they can look up Harinam Chitamani and they can try the suggestions given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Also a nice book by Satchinandan Swami where he incorporates a lot from the Harinam Chitamani. That also, he gives many nice suggestions for improving, for going from the mechanical to the other side.
Ecstatic,
yes. Satchinandan Swami in his book, Ocean, Nectarian Ocean.
He
suggests
that you read that one at the end of the
Vyavana
Samhita.
Yes, Bhakti Rasayan. Bhakti Rasayan is very nice. The end of, and that's included in his book. Bhakti Rasayan is a tonic for bhakti. A tonic for bhakti. Also in his book, there's a nice section of all prayers glorifying the holy name versus prayers. So that comes before that section. That's also very nice. These things help. Also to meditate on Shikshastakam before you chant. And also to pray to Panchatattva, because they free you from all offense. When you chant the Panchatattva Mahamantra, then all your offenses are removed. And you can chant Hare Krishna nicely. Yes.
How did that come about that devotees chant Panchatattva Mantra between rounds?
When Prabhupada was here, we didn't do that. We didn't do that. Between rounds. We never did it. I think we might have done it before we chant, just one time. But then I just picked it up also along the way. It wasn't like, yeah, I like it. I kept it because I thought, well, this is good because I'll get more purified and I'll remember Panchatattva more. And yes, Sankirtan. Oh. Okay, Marangopo. You do. Your friend chants Chana. That's also good. Because that's if you do that, you can chant constantly the holy name. That's nice, yeah.
I heard one Prabhupada this time tell me that, he told me that, not that there's no need between the rounds.
Right. It was something,
yeah. From a purport where it said, after chanting, like, this, you should. So someone just said it, and then it just caught on.
Yeah.
So it's not an official background.
It's not an official thing, but it's something that happened in the evolution of ISKCON.
Because I.
Yeah, so whatever helps you to concentrate the best. For me, I kind of like to remember Panchatattva also. So I do it. I keep it.
Keep it. What were you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of those things that just happened. The history of ISKCON.
After the CCP.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, after the CC came out.
And that was in better ways.
Prabhupada.
The law of power, it immediately becomes a female.
Prabhupada.
Prabhupada.
I think there is, isn't there, there's no long A there?
Prabhupada.
Oh, Prabhupada.
There's a long A.
Oh, at the end, at the end. Oh,
yeah, Prabhupada. That was short.
Well, if you want to talk about stuff like that, then... No, actually, when we first were chanting Panchatattva, it was Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Bhaja Shri Krishna. And then Prabhupada took off the Bhaja because some Sahajiyas were doing it or something. I don't know. He didn't. Somebody was doing it in Vrindavan that he did. Bhaja Nitai, it was Bhaja Nitai Gauradisham. So he said, don't say Bhaja, say Jaya. Yeah. That was during Prabhupada. That was during Prabhupada. Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And then he changed it. He didn't change. Yeah, he kept saying Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Okay, any other questions or comments on this section? Yes?
The demigods are helping the devotee.
The demigods are helping the devotee. Sri Rangam.
I'm sure that them feeling is very hot.
Acha.
It's summer.
Summer.
But devotees from the Sri Rangam, they feel because the devotees, they may suffer more.
Right, they may suffer more.
After some time, it's a good rain.
Okay.
Because,
so Vanumali is seeing how the demigods are helping because they sent nice rain for the devotees coming from the colder place. And that, I think that happened with these two devotees coming from the colder place. The rain came yesterday. Same thing happened here. Can see it in many ways. Or it could have been from the Gurukul Harinam on Saturday. Haribol. Yet immediately rain came. As soon as half an hour into their Harinam, it started raining. First rain. I mean, it was little, but it was the first rain since weeks. Oh, okay. And then it rained again. Then it stopped after the Harinam. And then Dashamula started at 10 o'clock. And again, rain came. So just see how the demigods are pleased. Krishna is pleased with the devotees and their sincere efforts at pleasing him. Yes, it's quite interesting how people see. Yeah, someone came to me after Dashamula and said, oh yeah, we got rain, you know, Dashamula. I said, oh, did you know about the Harinam this morning? So anyway, yes. Any other questions? Yes, Adipush. Devotee having emotions. Yes, Dhruva Maharaj got angry and Srila Prabhupada got angry many times. Yeah. Yeah, that's in what, 12th? 12, 15. Loka no dijati loka. He's very dear. He doesn't give trouble to anyone.
He's not disturbed.
He's equal to friends and enemies. Yes. So what's the question?
How to reconcile?
Well, Prabhupada says one thing one sentence, and the next scene, the opposite of the next scene. In this purport, right?
In this one? I don't know. Oh, in that purport, you mean?
No, this one that we're studying right now.
We're studying right now. No, last one.
Oh, we have to do it yet? I have enough room for
me. We finished. Verse 30.
That one was text 30. Oh, text 4. Okay. He says, became angry.
Oh, that one.
Enviously enemies.
Yeah, it's not incompatible.
It's not incompatible with his being a great devotee.
Hmm.
It is. Oh, I see. No, it actually says the same thing.
That says, oh, okay. Well, I have an understanding on this point, but. What do you think? Yeah, Vanamali?
Devotees generally not disturbed because sometimes.
Yes. So he's saying in the course of your duty, like Dhruva Maharaj, then it's okay to show anger. He was a Kshatriya. Kshatriya is supposed to be angry. How can he fight if he's not angry? Yeah.
Sixth canto.
Sixth canto.
The story is, you know, King Raghuvana and Sarvarat, when King Raghuvana, he filled himself at Sarvarat, as we don't know, he's going to build great hate in himself.
Yes, Raghuvana insults Sarvarat.
So there, so to understand that Sarvarat is very much hurt.
So Sarvarat is hurt. Just like Shiva too got hurt by Daksha's insults.
But then, he checks his feelings.
He checked his feelings.
But he's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Commands, he checks them.
He checks them. Okay.
And then starts speaking later on the transcendental knowledge.
Yeah, the point is that
he's hurt,
but still he thinks for the welfare of that person. So you see in your verse, it's saying he who does not cause trouble. So even though people give him trouble and he feels it, still, he does not retaliate in the same. He acts on the level of
transcendence.
So even though he may be feeling the waves of the modes of nature, he may be tossed, but he remains fixed in his duty and his outlook, in his behavior. In his behavior, he acts. Yeah.
Juba didn't do that, right?
No. No, Juba was. Yeah, he did. He did get carried away. It's fact.
He's not the level of Jivaraj.
Yeah, Jivaraj, and then Manu had to come and stop him. Yes.
Another example. The first canto is the end of a purport after the fight by Maharaj Yudhisthira. And Maharaj Yudhisthira is, the battle's over, the dead have been buried, and Prabhupada mentions that he felt some satisfaction as a human being. Mm-hmm. Even though pure devotee doesn't so much concern himself, it's still he just like, ah. Oh.
Right, finally it's over.
So,
Yeah. So we're thinking that the devotees, they have no emotions or anything, that they're just like
pure
something else.
Robots.
Yes, okay, now it is time to do this, now it is time to do that, and now I should feel this, I should act like that.
Yes.
Okay. He has spiritual emotions related to Krishna, but not to this world, right? Okay. Yeah. For the conditioned soul, it's a vega, manasa krodha vega, jiva vega, krodha vega, manasa. So it's a pushing. It's a pushing. It's not a pushing. Controlled use for a certain purpose. You say the pushing is there, but then the devotee harnesses it and uses it spiritually. Okay, Amaya Gopal, then Vaj Bihari, and then we'll come on this side. Devotional service in the mode of passion, that's true? Yes, he's preferring pure devotional service. Okay, every endeavor is covered with some fault, so therefore he's justified in being angry and lamenting. Yes. Okay, doesn't necessarily mean he's a pure devotee. Braj Bihari Prabhu? Okay, next, Bhagavat. Well, that's true, that's the point. Prabhupada, the next minute, his anger would be completely different. It'd be anger, and then immediate softness, or, yes.
So then the question kind of comes up is where do you find the balance between philosophy and the human aspect of being a devotee?
Yeah, this is very important.
It's
very important for ISKCON.
There was one article by Giriraj Swami, mm-hmm. that they had after a discussion about Swami about 9/11.
9/11. 9/11.
Yeah.
Not Bhagavad Gita 9/11.
No.
I think 9/11. Oh.
And how he was saying it. Feel like you could just preach in America, the people would just say, well, this is just those 2,000 people's karma.
No, of course not. Can't say that.
And another devotee goes and he's saying, no, that's totally bogus. This is just like being politically correct. It's their karma. And then he's talking to another devotee and he's saying, no, Giriraj Swami is emphasizing a certain aspect, and that is the aspect of compassion.
Yeah.
Just like he said, just
like when Prabhupada saw those devotees, saw those Mayapur Vasis going through garbage,
right,
trying to get some food, he didn't just say, oh, that's the karma, you know, they must not have fed a Vaishnava when he came to the last life, and so...
And just like dogs.
No, he actually started buying.
Yeah.
You know, so that balance, especially for us who aren't on the level of Srila Prabhupada, that kind of
especially
balance between philosophy and compassion is a tricky one.
It's very tricky. Especially like when Prabhupada was here, so many devotees, they took sannyas at a very young age. You know, it's just like, you know, the wife was 16, 17, 19. It's just like, you know, what's this? You know, it's kind of heavy. it's very, very relevant for us. So what did they, I know in New York, how did they react to that situation in 9/11?
The devotees had a very quiet pleasure. They didn't go
hard.
No, yeah. Actually, they went to the site and sat down and did very
gotcha.
Quiet.
I heard that there was a controversy. Somebody wanted to give donations to the firemen's family or something. I mean, there was something going on. I don't know what that was all about, but I heard there was something. And then another thing that happened was I heard they had a gathering of all the religious leaders from all groups, and Ravindasroop went there,
yes.
and he spoke.
On, 5/18/9.
Yes, about pacify, let the envious persons be pacified.
He made his own translation a little bit, just to call that translation a little bit to
make it
understandable. Very nice. He did a very beautiful translation.
Gotcha. So this is time, place, and circumstance. And other people, maybe devotees, would criticize, oh, you changed the translation, you can't do that. Anyway, but we have to see, and we have to see what will be the effect also of our preaching. Time, place, and circumstance. Yeah, the compassion aspect. Yes? Envious, yeah, he was envious.
But,
yes? So he was envious? Is misunderstanding, devotee should not be angry, envious, or overwhelmed by lamentation. And that when I read that verse, I read that letter. I brought up that letter from to Atreya Rishi, which you had read before in class. Yeah, about envious, and you know, even the gopis are envious, and kind of thing. Yeah, so that's that. Even in the spiritual world, envy is there, but everyone is trying to please Krishna, so therefore it's okay. So in this sense, he was doing his duty as a kshatriya. And he overreacted just to show that, you know, before he was against his brother and he actually wanted him to die. He wanted revenge, but now it happened. So he also, in a sense, perhaps was overreacting because he wanted to prove to people that, no, you know, I don't want my brother to, I didn't want this to happen. And, you know, he might have felt guilty also. I think this is brought up by Manu. In the verses in the next chapter, that no, you've proved to everyone now that you've shown that you're attached to Uttama and you've done your duty and all that. It's proven. Yes. 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 Right. Using in Krishna's service, and this will be discussed again, I think, in some future purport that we'll be hearing in the next few days. Prabhupada will get into what is justified anger. What is unnecessary anger? There will be a purport where Manu says, this is atiroshena, this is unnecessary anger. So it's like his anger came, but then he got carried away. He went over the limit. And Manu will point this out. You've gone over the limit, actually, in your anger. Vanamali?
When devotees are able to control his feeling,
yes.
If he has capacity, otherwise, he's all in the work is helping, God is looking through somebody else, like Manu is.
Yes, so a nice point that even if a devotee can't control, the Lord will help him through sending another devotee. Rajbihari Prabhu?
Well, it also just shows that you have to be careful about what you desire.
You have to be careful about what you desire, right. Yes.
He desired his brother's
death. And it happened.
There was an email recently from Bhakti Trismarj on the same subject.
Achcha.
And he had prayed, I can't exactly remember, but something like, you know, let whatever obstacles come his way, welfare, Prabhupada's movements, something like that. And now he has a big tumor in his throat, the size of a lemon.
Oh.
And he has sugar diabetes also, so he's having an operation in 3 days.
Oh, I didn't know.
And the doctor was saying he might lose the use of one of his legs. And then he was saying how the email was called the Power of Prayer. And he said that he's still praying like this, and he said that Krishna wants to take away
his life. Wow, quite amazing. He's still praying like that. He's praying, what is he praying? Hare Krishna. The lit whatever obstacles. Okay, so he was thinking to relieve the devotee's suffering. So he said, let the reactions come to me. Whatever is coming to ISKCON or the devotees, let it come to me. So then he got a big tumor in his foot, and he's got sugar diabetes, and they're having an operation in 3 days.
So he's asking the devotees to send prayers his way on 7:45 a.m. in America.
Okay. On the 5th.
Friday night for us on the 5th.
At night on the 5th.
So
pray for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj that he may overcome the obstacles that are being sent his way. He may be turned into spiritual service. And watch out what you pray. And sometimes devotees, they Queen Kunti's prayer is, let the calamities come again, and they come. And then what? And then they say, no, take away the calamity. Yeah, oh, of course. That's right. No, we can pray for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, certainly. And we should. Yeah, on the 5th. Today's the 2nd, so it's what? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Thursday evening.
I'm sure Krishna Mala will listen to prayers 2 hours early.
Yeah, you can even pray now. It doesn't matter the time. Because time is, time is relative. Really. Yeah. Okay, now who else had something to say? Madhu Mangopal. What's that? His question is Dhruva Maharaj a pure devotee? Can a pure devotee lose it like this?
Not yet.
He's not yet a pure devotee. Not in this chapter. Vajrabihari Prabhu says. What do you say, Madhu Mandapuri? Madhavendra Puri says he's already a pure devotee. He's seen the Lord, meditated, he saw the Lord outside the heart, and he's assured to go back to Godhead. So therefore he's a pure devotee. Krishna touched his head with his conch shell. He's not convinced.
You are. He's exemplifying mixed devotional service.
Yes, it's true. He's exemplary showing devotional service in the mode of passion. So sometimes he loses it, although he's a pure devotee. Yes. Yes. He was able to check. Different degradations of pure devotional service. That's true. Yeah, he may also be a pure devotee, but some not on caliber of Jadabharat Sankirtan Prabhu. Yes, he did. Mode of goodness, yeah. Devotional service in mode of goodness. Okay, he's a pure devotee in the sense he's a process of purification. So he's considered a pure devotee if he's in the process, in the fire. Green and red, difference between a green and ripe mango. That's what I did quote that in class. Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada one time, how many pure devotees are there on this planet? Prabhupada said, how many devotees are there in ISKCON? So that was his answer. So you can take it or leave it, take it. Yes, encouraging. It's encouraging. We're the unripe mangoes. So, and yes, there's levels of pure devotees. Yes, Dhruva Maharaj. So he's still going through purification, just like the mountain peak. The arrows were raining on the mountain. So it seems to point out that actually he was still getting purified. He was still in the process of purification. Okay, so now you're. Who are you comparing the temple managers to? Dhruva Maharaj? When they make mistakes like Dhruva does. They go over the limit. Okay. They're sincerely trying to do their service. Okay, difficult service. Rana Mali, yes, you have. Are you a temple president?
Oh. Somebody go to the doctor.
Okay. An example. Any other questions or comments on this part? No.